You will not find this kind of subjects on every Christian conference. And you can, of course, ask the question, why deal with this kind of cultural analysis? And it's a relevant question. But there is also, I think, a really relevant answer to that. If we look at Paul in the book of Acts, it's obvious that he did a cultural analysis of the city he came to and where he was called to preach the gospel. It says in Acts 17, verse 16, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. And if you just go to a Greek lexicon, it says that the word translated to see means to observe something with continuity and attention. It's just throwing a glance at something. It's really looking into something. And Paul is clarifying that when he then is given a chance to speak to the Athenians, or the council of the Athenians. So he's speaking before the Areopagus. And there he is saying, I see that in every way you are very religious, for as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. And again, if you just go into a Greek lexicon for the New Testament, it means to observe closely and give serious consideration to. Paul says, I have really looked into your religiosity. So you cannot dismiss me that I have not understood your beliefs, your perspectives, your ideas. I've looked closely into it. So this seems to be a relevant approach for a Christian, to look closely into the culture we have around us, the ideas we have around us. So I think we are on biblical grounds when we start to work with issues like metamodernism. The word modernism has then became a fancy word with a number of prefixes to it. So modernism, that is the term we use for the perspective from the Enlightenment, which of course still emphasized truth, but said it's not Christianity that is the truth. It's not true that there is really is a God, a creator God, but they still maintain truth, put a lot of hope in human reason, and thought that history will, from now on, since we have rejected God and put ourselves at the center and our reason at the center, it will be a progress. We will solve a number of issues. So we will be able to understand more and to make the world a better place and to improve maybe even the human being. So modernism is at the center of this kind of discussion. Of course, there was something before modernism. So that is then called the pre-modern period, where we as a culture believed in God, in his revelation. Of course, we believed in truth, and we affirmed reason as a tool. And God and revelation was then rejected at when modernism became the new starting point. Now, so modernism has been here for a long time, but it had some problems with the progress, you can say. So during the later part of the 20th century, modernism came into, run into problems. And we started to talk about post-modernism, putting the emphasis on subjectivity, on the individual, on the particular, not on the universal, on experience, not on truth. And there was a strong critique of grand narratives, like the Christian faith, which was a grand, a big story about life. But the modern perspective was also a grand grand picture of life, of progress. And there were those grand stories of democracy or of science or of humanism as an ideology. But all those started to crumble. There were no easy progress solving all our problems. So philosophers and artists, people working with literature, launched this new perspective, the postmodern. And now we are entering in, a lot of people are saying, to the next prefix, metamodernism. Okay, pre is what was before, and then you have modern, modernity or modernism, and then you have post, what's come after, and now a new prefix, metamodernism. It's, I think, important to see that in this discussion we have in our culture, modernism is the kind of perceived anchor, that is the point which everyone relates all the other things to, so pre-modern or post-modern or meta. That is the perceived anchor. I would argue that the real anchor for the Western civilization is not modernism, it's Christianity. It's the Bible, it's the Christian worldview. But culturally, this is how it's perceived today. Reason and progress at the center, and then when they fail, we discuss it, but still, that as a starting point. Francis Fukuyama wrote a book called The End of History, and the idea was still this idea of progress. And he thought that with the rise of liberal democracy, humanity's ideological evolution has reached its final stage, with Western liberal democracy becoming the universal form of government. So a kind of idea rooted in the modern perspective. But that perspective was heavily criticized by postmodern thinkers like Jacques Derrida and Jean-François Lyotard, who were critical towards this idea of an end of history, and they questioned the notion of a single universal narrative of progress and the legitimacy of grand unifying theories. So that is the postmodern critique of the modern. Jean-François Lyotard, he has a very interesting parable about his critique. He says, well, if we listen to different truth claims, different stories people are telling you, we should think of ourselves like an admiral on a ship. And the ship visits different islands and look into the island, listens to the people on the island, but you as an admiral do not set your foot on the island. You listen to people on that island, then you sail on to the new island and you listen to them. And you can learn, of course, something from them. And then you sail on to a third island, because no island have the truth. No island have got it right. They are just telling their story, which is dependent on their small context on the island. And you're very unwise if you settle on one of the islands. So the wise postmodern thing is to be on the ship and listening to those different stories. Okay, that's the postmodern idea. But now, what happens, to continue his parable, so this is not from him, I'm just continuing his parable, what happens if your ship starts to sink? Then suddenly the idea of an island to put your foot on becomes really interesting. And this is what has started to happen within our culture. The postmodern deconstruction of everything is not enough any longer. It was fun for a time where you could visit the different islands, but now the ship is starting to sink. And for more than one decade, you could say for two decades, there have been waves of crisis over Western civilization. Climate crisis. Democracy is not working as it did. We as human beings, there's not much progress in our well-being. So the psychological health crisis. Geopolitics is not working any longer. It's falling apart. And you have nationalism, and you have polarization, you have conflict, you have war. We have gone through a pandemic, so it's crisis after crisis after crisis. And you cannot solve the crisis with postmodern deconstruction, just pulling pieces apart and saying, that's your story. I have another story. So this is where we are now. Postmodernism deconstructs. But what to do when everything is in ruins? You need to rebuild some things. It's fun for some time to tear apart other people's perspective and pictures and narratives and show the weaknesses and so on. But when you have teared everything apart, what then? An American author, David Foster Wallace, he says this, and I think it's very well formulated. The problem is that once the rules of art are debunked, and once the unpleasant reality, the irony diagnosis are revealed and diagnosis, then what do we do? So postmodernism is working with irony and sarcasm and deconstruction. But when all that is said, what then? Irony, he ends, has gone from liberating to enslaving. It felt like freedom to mock all the grand narratives. But when that is done, and you have nothing to offer, how much freedom is there in that? That seems to be the background for meta-modernism. There is an emerging search for a better way. And I will try to describe that search for a better way and why it's termed meta-modernism. One of the first, person who captured this and uses the term metamodernism, the term goes back longer, but one of those who introduced it was Timotheus Vermeulen. He's from the Netherlands. He's a professor in Oslo and in art, and he is also a visiting scholar at Harvard University. So he's a very well established academics. He has published, together with a co-worker, a book called Notes on Meta-Modernism. That was 2010. Something new is happening, and they want to call it meta-modernism. In New York, Museum of Arts and Design, 2011, there was an exhibition with the title No More Modern, that is gone, Notes on Meta-Modernism. It seems like this new search has started among the creative people, artists and writers, painters, movie people. If much of the modern project, the Enlightenment, it started amongst philosophers, and if a lot of the postmodern started amongst people working with literature, this seems to be really captured by people within the arts. Here's an example they used to illustrate the new situation. Guido van der Werve, he has made this this piece of art called Number 8, and the title is Everything is Going to Be All Right. You see, it's this big icebreaker. There is a little man walking in front of the icebreaker on ice. What would in the postmodern era, how would this soon have ended? The man would have sank. The ship would have crushed him. And you have no idea how this man will be saved, but you hear the title, Everything is Going to Be All Right. We need some kind of hope, even though the situation is really strange and dangerous. There's become a search for some kind of hope. This is another artwork that is often used as an illustration. It's an old fat TV from like the 60s or 70s. There is this kind of, what do you call that in English? It's this, who separates some kind of screen, so you know there is something on the other side, but you cannot really see it. So Annabelle Dow, it's her artwork. And this is connected with a loudspeaker where she has asked people, which side are you on? And they are giving different kinds of answer. The question is not defined. What are the what are the two sides? You're just given the question. What side are you on? Forcing people to take a stand. Now that's opposite to the postmodern. You shouldn't take a stand. You should never go on board on the or set your foot on an island. You should be on the ship and just sail around. She is saying we need to take a stand. Which side are you on? We need to believe in some kind of future, even though we are very insecure about everything, and we need to take a stand, we need to have a hope, we need to have some way to move forward. That's the idea. If the postmodern generation was defined in Douglas Copeland's book, Generation X, he has relayed this, and he has written a new book, Generation A. And he described Generation A as a generation who wants to care. Generation X was the cynical generation who didn't care. So what? Everything is relative. Generation A wants to care. And of course, that is visible in many places in the culture. A lot of activism from young people taking a stand on a lot of different issues. So that's the difference between 1991, Generation X, and 2007, Generation A. If you want to see how they illustrate this in terms of modern movie, there is a YouTube film. It's a little bit too long to show you here. It's called Why Do Movies Feel So Different Now? And are giving you an example of how popular movies were during the postmodern time, and more recently, the movies that are created, produced. And there is an obvious difference. There is a different feel in new movies. If you go to Wikipedia, their definition of what is this new thing emerging? Metamodernism is the term for a cultural discourse and paradigm that has emerged after postmodernism. It refers to the new forms of contemporary art and theory that responds to modernism and postmodernism and integrate aspects of both together. Metamodernism reflects an oscillation, so moving between, or a synthesis of different cultural logics, such as modern idealism and postmodern skepticism, modern sincerity and postmodern irony, and other seemingly opposed concepts. So they are not leaving or criticizing totally the two previous perspectives. So they are not moving beyond them, leaving them behind, but they are oscillating between them, affirming some aspects there, some aspects there. Vermeulen, So you can see that is a name that a lot of people refer to, described metamodernism as a structure of feeling that oscillates between modernism and postmodernism, like a pendulum swinging between two opposite poles. Why is it called metamodernism? The word refers back to a dialogue of Plato. So in his dialogue, Symposium, there is a discussion about the god Eros. What is love? But it refers to the god Eros, asks Socrates. Is he mortal? How to view the god Eros? Is he mortal like you and me? No, is the answer. He's neither mortal nor immortal like the greatest gods. He's a great spirit and like all spirit, he's an intermediate between the divine and the mortal. Metaxy is in between. So it's from here they have taken this. Metamodernism is in between modernism and postmodernism. So this is, of course, a little bit confusing. It moves between two different perspectives, not always defining itself, but they are inspired from two different sources. I think it's helpful when we think of our culture that it is not a clean one perspective at a time situation, but there is many different perspectives now simultaneously in a culture. We were much, much, much more homogeneous in an earlier time when Christianity, for example, dominated with different streams under that umbrella. But now we live in a culture which Charles Taylor describes as we live under a lot of cross pressures, a lot of cross pressures, and therefore, the yellow at the bottom, we will see a number of middle positions because we have pressures from there and from there and from those ideas and from those ideas, and there will be middle positions or oscillation between different positions. So it's not a clear-cut picture. Frustrated if you are a Christian apologist who wants some coherence, some clarity, some logical consequences. It's either this or it's that. Well, that's not how culture works these days. An aspect in this development towards meta-modernism is the new media landscape. Here's an interesting book called The Crisis of Narration. I will not read all the text, but if you focus on the yellow text on the screen, he's describing what's happening in our culture with social media and media generally. Reality disintegrates into information that is relevant only briefly. In culture, only the moment counts. And he takes the examples of how we use the camera in our mobile, or how what's happening on Snapchat or Instagram. You post something, and that's really important for 2 seconds, but a few seconds later, something else is there, and that has totally gone. This is not like in the old day, you took a photo, and then it was framed and stood on a shelf for years. Stories on digital platforms such as Instagram or Facebook are not genuine stories. They have no narrative duration. Rather, they are just sequences of momentary impressions that do not tell us anything. It just gives an impression, a feeling. There is no narration over time. And you don't know the background or the continuation of what is coming to you on the screen. Selfies are momentary photographs. Their only concern is the moment. As a medium of remembrance, a selfie is fleeting visual information. He says, the momentary actualities of experience, which comes along successively and disappear. That's a problem with the phone. And he says, what's going on here is, this is a media of information, not of narration. I think this is really important. More and more people are realizing this, and the kind of emptiness of just being thrown a lot of information against one all the time, and it does not belong together. If you scroll down on your Instagram or Facebook or whatever you're using, that is what's happening. The coherence from which events derive their meaning gives way to a meaningless side by side and one after the other. There is no narrative horizon that lifts us above mere life. So he underlines, in the new media world, there is no grand meta narrative, no big stories. Now, that is viewed as a background for this new move, this new trend with meta-modernism, that people have become tired of this and want to tell real stories again. I like this quote from an American science fiction writer. Oh, I've written in Swedish there. Författare means writer. Okay. There have been great societies that did not use the wheel, but there have been no societies that did not tell stories. And now this is really coming back, to tell a story, not to deconstruct all stories, but to start to tell stories, real stories, bigger stories. And we all know that this is really a big thing in contemporary culture, to start to follow a story. Okay, so this is my way of trying to describe what is happening and why has it happened. So we are in a new situation, but all the old stuff is still there. So modernism is still with us, the fragmentation of postmodernism is still with us, but here is also something new happening. Here's an article from the Gospel Coalition by Brett McCracken. Is that the right? I don't know him, but it was a good article. You can read it on the net. Understanding the Meta-Modern Mind. And he is trying to give a Christian analysis and response to what is happening. And one of the things is that he underlines is that when you follow metamodernism, the word incoherence often come to mind. It's of course a positive move that people try to move beyond just deconstruction, just pulling apart things, but when they are going to pull things back together, there is no real coherence. He refers back to an old book from the 80s, Amusing Ourselves to Death, of Neil Postman. And he uses the phrase, we'd become adjusted to incoherence. And that is one of the effects, I would say, of the postmodern culture that was before what we have now. We have been adjusted to incoherence. We don't see or protest the way we should against what is really incoherent. He says, metamodern people have seen the unsustainability of postmodern deconstruction and they desire construction. They want to believe problems can be solved and progress can be made. Even as they are suspicious of absolute truth in theory, their existential reality leads them to desire it. So there is a disappointment with the postmodern, and kind of moving back to some aspects that was part of the modern, and which you can say ultimately have the roots in the pre-modern, some affirmation of truth, and an acknowledgement that the existential reality we are living in forces us to try to find something stable to put our foot on. We are sinking. We need something more. The problem from a Christian point of view is what C.S. Lewis says in Mere Christianity. If you are on the wrong road, progress means doing an about turn and walking back to the right road. In that case, the man who turns back soonest is the most progressive man. So, our response is that, of course, it's good that there are some awakening from the postmodern cynicism and deconstruction, but long term, it cannot be solved by going back partly to the modern and partly keep some of the postmodern. We need a real repentance in our culture, so to speak. So to end the presentation here, we can't go beyond modernism and postmodernism and find the way forward. That is a mistake. We can't look in between modernism and postmodernism, which metamodernism is trying to do, and find the way forward. We need to go back to the basic perspective that was before modernism. We need to repent and go back to the real roots of our culture, which means an affirmation of truth, affirmation of God as the ultimate truth, of his revelation, that he, from his infinite perspective, has spoken to us and acted in history, and that that revelation is accessible to us also with the tools of reason. So we need to go back to the grand narrative of Scripture. So I think there are some positive trends in metamodernism that we can connect to, but we still would have a basic criticism and saying, you have no basis on which to take a stand. You have no basis to say it will all end well for the man on the ice if you have rejected God. It's just an optimistic, naive view of, we need to have a hope. It needs to end well.